Welcome, everybody, to The Rad Life, the only talk radio show that takes you along with host and age explorer Rod Gontos on his continuing journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older. The Rad Life is brought to you this week by Your Home for a Lifetime, a company dedicated to empowering you to stay safely, independently, and comfortably in your own home. And now here is your host, Rad Gontos.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Wednesday, the 31st, the last day of the month. Can't believe it's almost August. Really, right?
You say that every month.
Huh?
You say that every month.
Every month? I can't believe it's August. I can't believe it's September.
Yeah, everybody
I'm just very jaded, and I just don't believe anything.
I think that's the truth.
But, you know, it's interesting because if I had to pick, this year has been full of different things, a lot of stuff, and a lot of adjustments, a lot of changes.
Different usually doesn't mean good.
Well, no.
Different.
It's like just life, you know? I mean, just life. I mean, we're in turbulent times. In turbulent times. I think just, you know, getting older, people around you, if you're fortunate enough to still have your parents around, you know, the reality of your relationships changes, the roles that you play changes, you know, whether you like it or not, if you happen to be close to your family and your parents, like I said, are still around, you are now thrown into sort of this, hopefully gently into a caregiver role, but it could also be jarring.
Usually abrupt.
Yeah. Some sort of medical diagnosis, or some sort of, heaven forbid, you know, somebody falls or something like that, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, well, let me just add this to my to-do list now, right? It's almost like an open-ended task, right? Because, you know, can you talk about the mixed feelings? Like, oh, now you're not saddled necessarily, but you now have this also to contend with, to add to your responsibilities, and you really don't want to do it, but at the same time you don't want to stop doing it because it's no longer something you have to worry about, because that means that somebody may have basically passed.
What are you leading towards?
Like,
what, where are you going?
Where I'm going with this is that as much as you are prepared, or you think you are prepared, I'm first basically to admit it, and I kind of admitted it a little bit earlier on a video feed that I did, like a 1 minute video feed I did on social media. I've been doing this show for 4 years, four plus, right, Paul? It's like about 4.5 years almost we've been doing this.
And I don't believe that.
You don't believe that?
I can't believe that.
If there's anybody more jaded in the world than me, it's you, right? Okay, so, but that's another show altogether.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe we'll do that after we come back from our break.
Jaded guys here,
a couple of jaded guys sitting around. Well, it's like, you know, they have this show now, you know, like comedians in cars getting coffee.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so jaded guys with mics in a room in the corner of
in
a tower.
The whole show is, can you believe this? No.
Can you believe this? I can't believe this. Can you believe this? All right. So, we might get two episodes out of it, and I think we're going to run out of topics.
But a lot of people would tune in.
Well, as long as we have the same kind of administration in Washington, it might actually be more than two episodes.
Yeah, right.
You know, still stretching it.
Could be four more years, my fear. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, thanks for the lightheartedness. But just to go back to being serious for a minute, life has this way of basically throwing some changes in your path. And I've been doing this show for 4.5 years, and I thought, you know, I am ahead of the curve, man.
Yeah.
I am learning everything I need to do about everything, including seniors, which is the show started off as a baby boomer focus, and it pretty much is something we keep visiting, going back to on a regular basis. And we've had people and experts and resources that have been on here, everything from end of life. I mean, I'm thinking, I am so ready. Jackie, you could sit me down. I could weather any storm that comes my way. If it has to do with my parents getting older.
Or you getting older.
Or me getting older.
Right.
Yeah, now really depressing me. But and then my father, my mother basically gets diagnosed with cancer about a year ago March was diagnosed with cancer.
I don't think we've ever talked about that on the show, but I know that's been a shock.
Yeah, well, it's non-operable lung cancer.
Yeah.
And thank God it's not small cell, and she's doing as well as can be expected. She is functional, you know, she's basically has to be on a pill every day for the rest of her life, and all the realities of medical and dealing with the medical and the insurance and the
visits,
drug companies and all of that stuff,
uncertainties,
right?
and fears, and
thank God, fortunate enough to be financially able to handle things, but I can only imagine somebody that is not able to, as difficult as it is if you are, how much it is if you're not.
And the fact that her children are here. What if she was in another country or another part of the country?
We're literally 3 miles away and 6 miles away. You know, I could see my parents every day if I wanted to. Most of the times I do, but, you know, there are times when you just spread it out a little bit more, right? But we see each other at least once a week.
Obviously, we've talked many times about my parents dying of Parkinson's and other things through the years. And one of the things, I'm an only child, and I had moved away a long time ago to California.
I cannot imagine doing that when you have people.
Yeah. It was the motivating factor, my father finally to move to Palm Springs after 100 years saying we're never leaving the family home back in Michigan, because he simply couldn't take care of her anymore.
Right, and these are. I remember when I went and got certified for my aging in place in Chicago, 2008, I think it was, right? That's 11 years ago. Because I couldn't get the classes here in a timely manner. There's like, no, nobody ages in California.
Yeah, right. Nobody
gets old. We don't put salt on driveways. We don't have winter clothes. What's this winter clothes?
Spring.
We wear cotton printed like flannel, and we pretend that it's cold and put a scarf around our necks.
Well, didn't they call it endless summer?
Endless summer. Right. So, my mother's situation, and then my father got diagnosed with front lobe dementia. And my father is in his 80s. My mom is in her late 70s. You know, you don't know how you're going to react to this. You think you're ready. You think, you know, I'm just going to pick up a phone. I know all these people in the senior industry. I'm going to reach out to this, reach out to that. And then when it hits you, your first reaction to it is you circle the wagons. Like, wait, hold on. Stop the shock factor. Like, you go through the shock, you go through all these things, but it's not like somebody actually passed away. You're going through stages of grief, but the person is still around, and you're watching with your own eyes sort of the diminishing capacity of somebody. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, you know, it's a rough thing for anybody to deal with, let alone if somebody doesn't have a support system or people around him. And I can, you know, that you're all of a sudden thrown into the role of caregiver in one capacity, one degree or the other, you know, even if you have siblings that are also sharing that burden.
So let's identify your guest. Everybody's been watching her. She's been patiently nodding and listening to us ramble on here. Let's at least identify what we're going to discuss.
That's what I usually do with you. You ramble on and I basically nod my head because it's your therapy session. It's my therapy session.
Let's identify your guest here.
Right. So I am very fortunate to have Anne Gray, who's the executive director for the Alzheimer's Association Orange County chapter, with us today. And I already said to people, please consider calling in, asking questions, you know, tweet us. Paul, let's give people the number.
949-330-7760. That's 949-330-7760. Operators standing by.
And if they want to tweet, how do they get hold of us?
Hashtag OC Talk Radio.
Okay, so please take advantage of this fact that we have this wonderful lady with us today and this great organization, and let's share with you guys some resources.
I'm going to talk about what nobody wants to talk about, which is the core of this show.
That I'm here to tell you affects everybody. It's affecting me right now. It's affecting people in my immediate family. Anybody that's around me that knows me knows that this is something that you carry with you. Don't just park it at home from 6 to 9, and, you know, hopefully I don't deal with it past 10 o'clock. And it's progressive.
Right.
And it changes. It's not a set thing. So you're kind of on for hopefully as long as you – it's the one job you do not want that you hopefully never have to stop doing.
Right. And thank you for having me on today. Yeah. I'm really grateful to be here because everything you're describing is something that people don't talk about very often.
Dementia has
a stigma. Yeah. And people dealing with it in their family oftentimes keep it very private, when the most important thing to do is to talk about it and get support, which is what the Alzheimer's Association is here to help with.
Well, it affects – I mean, I'll just share this. What one other layer of complexity to this is I have my mother was dealing with cancer, so there's medical visits and things like that. And then my father – okay, so now we're faced with the fact that my father's driving capabilities are basically at jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't really want him to drive – because he's scraping the sides of cars and garage doorways. But at the same time, if he loses that functional independence, Now the whole burden is now not only on myself and my sister, but also my mother, who is the primary person living in the same household with him. So there's practical realities, and you find yourself torn. Like, how should I basically feel about this? Where should my priorities go in how I'm navigating and dealing with this? And if you don't talk about it, you're right, Anne, if you don't talk about it, then you're basically left to your own resources to deal with it, and you're completely incapable. I will admit myself, I'm incapable. I don't know what to do.
Right, right.
So, you know, let alone I know maybe where I can go, but not a lot of people do know that these resources are out there.
Right, and that is one of the reasons I am passionate about the work that we do with the Alzheimer's Association. My story is similar. My grandfather was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease, and our family did not know what to do or mm-hmm. where to turn, and it was agonizing. Mm-hmm. And I actually knew the Alzheimer's Association existed. You know, I've worked in nonprofit a long time, and I was familiar with the organization, and I knew that they funded research. What I didn't know until I began working for the Alzheimer's Association is all of the free programs and services and education we have for people with dementia, their families, their caregivers, the community in general. And it would have been a game changer for our family if we had been able to call our 24/7 helpline and say, we're having issues with this or that. And the education and support groups that are offered are really a lifeline to people who are dealing with something right. that they don't know how to navigate. Our family didn't know how to navigate it. And so I'm very passionate about our research, for one. Right. We want to end this disease because it's expected to triple by 2050. And I don't like that math for how old I am today. Yeah. That doesn't work well for me.
Everybody in this room.
Exactly. And the fact that everybody has competing demands mm-hmm. and they want to do what's best for their loved one and what's best for their family. And the primary thing that we share with families is safety is of utmost importance. And so for an issue like should they be driving or shouldn't they be driving, people can call our 1-800 helpline. And I really encourage people just to put that number in your cell phone. And when you're driving, thinking about an issue, just call. Voice
put,
call.
Put it out there. What is the number?
It is 1-800-272-3900.
One more time.
1-800-272-3900.
And we'll have that in the show notes, and we'll give it out later yeah. as well.
And let's just step back for a minute. For those who are not aware of how big the numbers are mm-hmm. in this disease and how many people it affects, let's give some facts on with Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yes, and there are some...
And the different types, obviously, there are different types that people are not aware of.
Yeah, and I'll start with the term dementia itself, right. because dementia is an umbrella term, like cancer is an umbrella term, right. and there are different types of dementia. The most common form of dementia is Alzheimer's disease. About 60% of all dementias are Alzheimer's yep. disease. Other forms of dementia can be frontal temporal dementia, mm-hmm. like your dad's mm-hmm. diagnosis.
What's the difference between that, just so...
It's about which part of the brain is affected,
okay.
mainly in the simplest lay terms.
But the symptoms are the same or the results are the same?
The results are ultimately the same. Some of the behaviors are different based on different different diseases because of the parts of the brain that it affects. Yeah. So for Alzheimer's disease, for instance, your memories go first mm-hmm. and your executive function, and then ultimately your ability for your brain to power your body for breathing and a heartbeat, and mm-hmm. people ultimately die from this disease. In frontal temporal dementia, the brain deteriorates in a different way with, unfortunately, the same result. But those symptoms early on are more behavioral mm-hmm. than memory. Mm-hmm. And then in vascular dementia, it is, again, that cognitive decline based on the brain being starved of oxygen and those cells deteriorating.
Vascular meaning blood.
Blood. Right. Yes. And then there are also many other smaller types of dementia. Well, not smaller types, but smaller percentages of disease that are dementia specific. Another very common form of dementia is Parkinson's related mm-hmm. dementia. While my grandfather was suffering with Alzheimer's, my grandmother had Parkinson's. And
that's what I saw with my yeah. mother. We weren't prepared for that. We got to get you to look into the mic, though.
Oh, sorry.
Every time you turn away and look at me, you go off the mic. My mother got very demented the last year or two of her life, and she had Parkinson's. What does that have to do with it? Nobody prepared us for that, and nobody explained that. And they were focused on the Parkinson's, which she's shaking, she's falling, she's you know, got all these tremors that are hard to watch, severe tremors, and yet in the process became very demented the last year.
And
we just assumed it was the drugs or her basically shutting off her will to live, you know.
And that was hard for our family, too, because we witnessed the same thing and didn't really understand it. Yeah. But it is having to do with the nerve activity in the brain and that eventually being impacted as a result of the Parkinson's in the simplest terms.
How much, and just in the umbrella definition, how many people are affected by these diseases?
So Alzheimer's specifically is about 5.8 million people in the United States. And as I said earlier, that it's expected to triple by 2050. Mm-hmm. It is disproportionately impacting women. Two-thirds of all people with Alzheimer's are women. Mm. It also disproportionately impacts women as caregivers because they might be caring for a parent who has Alzheimer's.
Primary profile of a caregiver.
Right.
And why is it going to triple? Is it because we're living longer, or is there something? Is this environment? Is this simply a function of us living longer?
More people aging?
It's all of those things, actually. And we're trying to pinpoint why it's not just increasing because there's an increase in population and the aging population. It's disproportionately increasing based off of that. And so there is something that is happening either physically or environmentally that we need to pinpoint. And so we're doing a lot of research to study those areas so that we can intervene.
Is it genetic?
There is a gene component, a genetic component to Alzheimer's disease. If you have a first-degree relative who's had Alzheimer's, your chances are much greater to have Alzheimer's disease. There are a series of genes that are common in people with Alzheimer's disease, but there are also people who carry those genes that never develop Alzheimer's disease. So we can't say, oh, if you have X gene, you're going to get Alzheimer's, except for one very specific gene that is very discrete in a certain population from South America. And that population group who gets early onset Alzheimer's, and it really is a guarantee that if someone in your family has that and you carry the same set of genes, that you're also going to get early onset Alzheimer's. But this group has been extremely participatory with the Alzheimer's Association in populating clinical trials because we can study the impact of the disease, its pathology, and everything.
So
very
you're saying
clearly.
Some group from some country or some sub?
Yes. It's a dominantly inherited Alzheimer's disease gene. The group is from Colombia. Mm-hmm. There was actually a documentary on 60 Minutes about it several years ago, but this is a group that the Alzheimer's Association works with very closely.
And last question, and then I'll let Red jump in, is this something that can be tested for, whether you have it, or is it like Parkinson's, it's strictly observational?
Can you in advance at least test for the possibility or the high probability if somebody has these genes or they're predisposed potentially?
Because clearly my mother had Parkinson's, but they never could prove it. There is no test that says you have it. It's just observational.
One of those things that you only know when it happens.
So today for the general public, for Alzheimer's disease, it's an agonizing process of ruling everything else out. And that's just not okay.
While it's happening.
It's
already happened.
It's already happening.
And out what it is.
It's an agonizing process of ruling everything else out. Okay. And so what we're looking at, because we know the pathology of the disease, what's happening in the brain for people who get Alzheimer's disease, starts occurring 20 years before the symptoms occur. And so what we're working very hard on right now is a blood test diagnostic to detect those changes. And we're also working very hard in research on identifying a drug cocktail to halt that process in its tracks. So I could be sitting here today with Alzheimer's disease pathology in my brain, and if a diagnostic existed and a cocktail existed, I would never exhibit the symptoms of Alzheimer's and have that horrible road ahead.
Because the point is, you could misdiagnose it.
Why you were saying it with your mother.
Yeah, to the day my mother died, my dad said she doesn't have Parkinson's disease. She has something like it. And we have a history of familiar tremor. Everybody sits in here long enough sees my hand shakes.
Yeah.
So that's been in our family forever. And he said it was just severe form of that. And they said, could be. But no, observationally, we're guessing. We've seen this before. We think this is full-blown Parkinson's. There was no test. So, and the point is, without knowing what it is, maybe they're giving her the wrong drug. Maybe they're giving a drug from Parkinson's and she really doesn't have it, or vice versa. So the same thing, I think, could be true for Alzheimer's. If you miss, if it's strictly observational, you could miss something and misdiagnose it.
Well, and let's talk for a minute about the Alzheimer's Association. It's you are the executive director of the Orange County chapter.
Correct.
But this is a network that is nationwide. All right?
Yes.
And there are other associations, there's other resources that are all engaged in this fight to basically try to eradicate or control,
which sometimes can be very confusing,
manage this disease that affects a lot of people. Like you said, I mean, it is overwhelming to think that with 5 million people affected now, you're going to have triple that in 2050 is just around the corner.
Yes.
Right? And so I would assume that different associations or different organizations may have a slightly different focus, or the way that they go about it, and
or tackle different parts of
the network that they are part of, or whatever. Right? Can you talk a little bit more about the Alzheimer's Association and from that perspective?
And what other groups are here in Orange County that you're affiliated with or similar to?
That may have a different focus.
Yeah, I think that. To answer your question, it's really important to know that the Alzheimer's Association is a national organization serving the people in the United States who are afflicted by Alzheimer's disease and dementia, but we're also a global leader in the research front.
Okay.
And we just convened about 6,000 scientists from around the world at our Alzheimer's Association International Conference in Los Angeles to discuss the latest breakthroughs, like a blood test, like things we can do in our lifestyle and habits to delay the onset of Alzheimer's disease. So the Alzheimer's Association, our mission is to eliminate Alzheimer's disease through research and provide care and support for families and caregivers and people with dementia until we finish that research to eradicate the disease, and also promote brain health. We're learning more and more about how healthy lifestyle factors can impact brain health. And so we have a network of 77 chapters throughout the country. If you have a sister in Ohio and she's caring for, you know, a parent there, and you're in California, you're getting the same information and the same resources from the Alzheimer's Association that are evidence-based to help that family member and help you as a caregiver and help you as a child of someone with dementia and how to deal and communicate with all of those issues.
Let's talk a minute. You mentioned healthy lifestyle.
Yes.
So share a little bit of that, the latest on that. Research.
Yeah, it's exciting research, and a lot more just came out of the Alzheimer's Association International Conference. But lifestyle factors in the preliminary studies that we've looked at, and these are global studies that we're replicating throughout the world and just advanced the study here in the United States in an exciting way, which I might have a chance to touch on later. But we're looking at lifestyle. And the studies we've seen so far have reduced the incidence of mild cognitive impairment, that's that early cognitive decline, by 19% just by improving lifestyle.
Meaning what? Meaning, you eat or how you exercise?
So what we're looking at is a healthy diet, physical activity, social interaction. Those are the main four things that we're looking at.
So some of this is common sense stuff that we should be all doing anyway.
Absolutely.
But as we get older, do we eat better? Probably not. We probably even eat less. Right. Do we exercise more? Probably not. And certainly, we become more isolated. As family moves away, people die off.
Your sports network. Yes, you have to constantly be engaged in providing that for yourself. And that makes perfect sense. On the dietary thing, has there been any advances relevant to the dietary?
So there's some very specific things.
Yeah.
We recommend the MIND diet or the DASH diet. Both of those are really based on the Mediterranean diet. For the simplicity of all the listeners out there, if you follow the Mediterranean diet, you're really eating a brain-healthy diet. I always make the comparison, if it kind of looks like a brain, it's good for your brain. If it's cauliflower, if it's broccoli, if it's a walnut.
It looks like a brain, it's good for your brain.
Just keep that
like
in mind.
That.
If it's a blackberry, you know, think of the things that kind of look like a brain and choose those if you have the option between a square of cheese and a
Can I give you a silly one that somebody told me? Maybe I'm reaching for straws here, but Somebody told me cinnamon actually has been shown to, like, cinnamon toast or cinnamon things. Or...
So anything anti-inflammatory, yeah, it can be very helpful, and that's been proven. Anything high in omega-3 fatty acids, avocado is great in moderation. Somebody told me once, if you eat an avocado every day, you have all the nutrition you need for the day. I mean, it's just a superfood.
So is cinnamon good or bad? I don't know if cinnamon is good or bad.
It's an anti-inflammatory, so it's good.
Anything that's anti-inflammatory.
Yeah.
Okay. I read an interesting book about a year ago, Brain Grain.
Okay.
We've had a lot of people talk about that.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the whichever way that you, whether you believe fully or not, the premise is manage your food intake and your selections of what you basically put into your body, and it has a direct link to your health. Wow, that was just a revelation, right? We don't all know that as long back as we wanted to ignore it.
Right? We don't want to accept it.
Right, yeah. But and then exercise and the social element is something that we don't emphasize enough. But the more and more I hear, the older I get, the more I realize just how critical that is.
So, for example,
because people are very, very easy for people. You see somebody that is basically isolated, not necessarily by force, but by choice. They don't have the people skills to connect with people. They don't want to get out of their comfort zone to basically engage with somebody they don't know. They've all their lives have been sort of maybe introverted, but now that they don't have the ability to engage with people in a work environment, things like that, because those parts of their functional parts of their lives are now basically receded, they now basically find themselves isolated by their own doing.
And I'll give you an example.
That has a direct impact on the quality of your
I'll give you an example of how that can happen. Yeah. I don't know in your own family's case, but my mother, the more she started to shake, the more she was embarrassed and wouldn't go out, wouldn't join, wouldn't talk, to the point where our relatives would ask me about her back in, she was from Minnesota. She didn't want to see him. She didn't want people to see her like this. She wouldn't say that, but she cut herself off from everybody, her sister and everybody, because she was embarrassed.
Right, which is a very powerful thing that happens to certain people, and yet you are harming yourself in the long run,
right?
Because you're basically eliminating this sort of support social network component. So it's that is one of those things that the more and more I think about it, the more I try to continue to emphasize to people, please, you know, get out of your comfort zone. Engage, do something, you know, even if it's a matter of walking out, you know, engage with people, like just say hello. We live in a society where people pull out of their garages in the morning, pull back into their garages at night. They may talk to their neighbor on the weekend. Weeks may go by without even saying anything, you know. And basically, we live in this bubble of isolation unless it's our immediate families. And if we lose our immediate families, then where do you have a support system unless it's maybe a senior center or, you know, some sort of activity-based thing, right? But even then...
Yeah,
let me give you one other question. So we talked about food, we talked about diet, everything, we talked about exercise, that's common sense things. What about mental exercise? Does that delay it?
So we know it doesn't hurt.
Brain puzzles.
It doesn't hurt. We have something on our website called 10 Ways to Love Your Brain. And one of the things on that little cheat sheet of 10 Ways to Love Your Brain is cognitive stimulation. Learn a new language. Learn a new craft. Take out that shelf from IKEA and figure out how to build it. You know, you can do all these great things that just kind of challenge your brain that are very easy. And keeping engaged with Sudoku and word puzzles and the crossword puzzles and anything that gets you thinking is going to stimulate those neurons.
You realize you just basically developed a B2B relationship with IKEA, right?
Oh, I did? Does that get me in trouble here?
I think if anybody works for IKEA that's listening to the show, just call Alzheimer's Association, because I think we just figured out another benefit to your assembly manuals that basically everybody makes a joke about.
But I just
read... It's a win-win, I think.
I just literally saw something. I didn't know you were coming in today. Yesterday, one of these articles that everybody's posting on, you know, LinkedIn or Facebook or whatever, and one of them, somebody had posted, learn a new language. Talk about that sounds. I've known a couple of people that late in life, when they're retired, take it upon themselves to learn, I don't know, Thai or Lithuanian or something crazy. Not something that they're going to use in day-to-day life. They just simply do it as a mental exercise.
Yeah, it's very important. And they there are studies that show people with advanced education who do a lot of learning later in life, go back to school for an advanced degree, have a lower incidence of Alzheimer's and other dementias. But learning a new language is something everyone can do. And you can immerse yourself in, especially in Orange County. I mean, we are a melting pot of cultures. And if you choose a language
with a lot of educational opportunities, lot of places that offer these things. Yeah, no, and there's an added layer to this is socializing. Like if you're going to go take classes, then you're basically functioning. You're moving, you're walking, you're going, you're sitting, you're engaging.
And then you're going to go talk to people who speak that language so you can practice it. So you're going to meet new people. Yeah.
Well, right. But
you're going to go to the Thai restaurant just to practice your Thai or something.
But
and
eat the food, right?
Yes.
Yeah. whatever
it takes to get you out of an isolated state. Yeah. I think you are better off for doing it than not doing it. If it's a small baby steps, great. Walking around your neighborhood versus just sitting at home. I mean, what's funny is we don't realize how structured our lives are when we are sort of in our working life years.
Mm-hmm.
And how when that basically goes away as a cornerstone for our daily routine that engages us with people without effort, engages us with other people. Puts us in a situation where we're problem solving. We're task oriented, to-do lists, all of this stuff. Once that goes away and the burden of being in that role goes away and you are now basically sort of retired or what have you, right? All of that is gone.
Yes.
And if you don't plan to actually have some sort of a backup system to at least offset or compensate for some of that, then you find yourself at a loss. And there's a lot of people, and I will say, my father is very... introverted when it comes to certain things. Like we refer to it as sort of your typical engineer personality, which is, I know I'm being unfair to some engineers, but, basically the social network is through work. The mental exercise and problem solving, cognitive kind of stimulation through things that you were doing. You're building buildings, you had to make sure compression testing, all of this stuff was pieces of a puzzle that you had to figure out on a daily basis at any time. You didn't do it on a time schedule even.
Right.
And then now it's gone.
So can I ask you a couple?
Now it's gone.
We never really talked about this, but maybe you don't want to go there. But can I ask you a couple of questions about your dad? How long ago did he retire? He what had his own civil engineering or construction company?
No. My father always worked for somebody. He was in a very high executive role. He was
doing what?
He worked overseas. He was supervision engineer. He's a civil engineer by trade.
Right.
Supervision engineer. So you're out on job sites in a lot of heat in the Middle East. You're pouring concrete at that night. You're responsible for construction
and building big things. Yeah.
You got multiple people on a job site. You've got, you are the person. You are the top of the pyramid of terms of responsibility. And then he basically in 2000, about 98, 99 maybe, retired, moved over, and the joke was that he retired to his own house, building his own house. So he literally went to a small shack instead of a big trailer and basically sat there while we built a house for about 13 months, right? And then...
So that gave him something to do in the transition.
And then here comes, with my sister and having kids, now my parents became grandparents in their role. They're basically helping with sort of the, picking up
the kid,
this stuff, right? So there was sort of purpose to it. You had to take people around. But even then, we started seeing a little bit of, absent-mindedness a little bit of distraction, and some things like driving and so forth. And my sister being, cautious about this kid's safety. But my father went from having all his social network, all his support, all his friendships based on the work environment people he worked with, in a country halfway across the planet, to basically now being here without that and not being the kind of personality that is self-motivated to basically go and seek that out.
And a shrinking world.
His world just shrank and shrank and shrank and shrank until we are now in a situation where he basically, his way of connecting with the world is emails. And everybody else in his circle of overseas is basically all they're doing is regurgitating junk emails to each other, right? Watching news, watching History Channel, watching things like that. He's not even reading as much because he basically, I think, has a hard time reading. Mm-hmm. It took us forever to get him to basically even put in earring aids, to wear earring aids, and. The behavioral pattern, because of his diagnosis, you can see that sort of irritation that behavioral change in behavior patterns. He's always been had that, but you know, and I'm being semi-serious. You know, they say that when you get older, you get less diluted. I'm watching that happen in front of my own face, and it's difficult. It's like, you know, yeah. I can't get somebody to come to the house and basically do a cognitive testing on him. We have to take him to where the people are. I can't get him to do that because he's totally frustrated with the fact that he's been going to medicals and tests and doctors and this and that, and he's not seeing any benefit. We've got him doing personal training at the 24-hour fitness nearby in San Clemente. And, you know, I watch him at the gym, and he seems a little bit more stable and confident. He gets back home, and that is kind of – it's not there. Right, but he's also kind of like his expectations is to basically see the benefit of that faster than it is, right? Yeah. And you can't go from non-active to seeing the benefits of being active within 3 months, right? So all of these and trying to keep him basically on track to continue to do that.
So does he important. Keep up? Does he read professional journals still?
No.
Does he?
Yeah. No. Yeah. I remember a few years ago I had an opportunity to basically work on a project with my father. They sought him out for an embassy project in D.C.
Wow.
Okay. To basically, big deal. They wanted him. There was a gentleman who was being asked to basically take it on, and he said, "I will take it on if my father would basically be that key person overseeing it." And he was in San Clemente, or we're living in San Clemente. This project was in D.C. I'm kind of in an affiliated industry, and I was like, "Awesome! I have an opportunity to basically work with my dad on a very high-profile project in Washington D.C." And he turned it down. And he turned it down, I believe, because he absolutely did not feel confident enough, having been out of the loop for a little bit of time, to take it on.
Wow. Hmm.
And I said to him, I said, "Listen, do it. We'll bring in the support. We'll
figure it out.
We'll
yeah.
figure it out. We'll do it." And he just absolutely did not. The man was scared. I mean, you've said it before about you, Paul, right? Where mm-hmm. you're saying, you know, in previous parts of your life, you've been a go-getter. You took risks and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And now you find yourself basically worried and afraid and all this stuff.
Yes.
It's really very...
Which is not characteristic
for me. Very reality
challenging yeah.
and very jarring when you see somebody, a parent, an uncle, an aunt, somebody that you hold in high regards basically go through this because you desperately want to do something.
Right. Right.
And you're dealing with your own mixed emotions of what's going on and how you're dealing in anger, frustration, everything. But at the bottom line, you want to try to help.
Right.
And to do it appropriately and
yes.
have no idea how to do it.
And that's where, again, you know, the Alzheimer's Association, that's part of our mission, is to help take that guesswork out of it. Because as we talked about earlier, a lot of the diagnosis is a process of ruling everything else out. There are tests that are more definitive for all the different types of dementia, but they're more invasive. And it takes a while to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And the behaviors that you're describing as far as the agitation and the isolation, as people feel themselves slipping away, those are natural behaviors.
Can only imagine.
And so it's very important for families to discuss these things when they see them very early on.
Right.
And so one of the things that the association is really focused on is having those conversations early about if you feel like something's different in a loved one or in yourself, you have to be the advocate to your doctor to say, "Hey, I'm not feeling quite right. myself," because it could be something that is treatable, like a thyroid imbalance or a bladder infection.
Depression.
Those things can all cause cognitive function to decrease.
Right.
And so it's really, really important to do that. And socialization is a very key component. A lot of our research shows that people who are less socially active or socially involved and people who are in highly stressful professions have a much higher incidence of Alzheimer's disease. Mm. My grandfather was a classic person. He served in the military. He was a naval aviator. That's a highly stressful mm-hmm. job. Then he became an air traffic controller.
Wow.
So not only
yeah.
was he in a very
From
stressful
the
job,
the fire.
He yeah. was in a very polluted environment.
Yeah.
And so he had a lot of, and he was a very highly social person and played bridge and other board games till, you know, he couldn't any longer. So the social aspect wasn't his issue. He was in a highly stressful profession in a polluted situation. Mm-hmm. And those are all things that we see that can
dad.
Be indicators. And it sounds like your dad's
yeah,
similar.
Yeah, I mean, you're working in a job in a construction environment in the course of, you know, being overseas in a third world country. Yeah, I mean, there's safety factors.
Yeah.
It's a very high stress job. It is here too in the construction industry, but yeah, no, and how do you basically dissect the diagnosis, if you will, to where you're also not doing a blanket, like it's almost like a custom bespoke diagnosis. Like, what is happening with this particular person? Are there certain things that can be done? Like, why, if I believe the person is depressed, why have we not looked at that and possibly giving them something to maybe at least help them mindset-wise? Not necessarily to achieve the same quality of life they had before, but at least to improve what they're going through on a daily basis. Like, things of that nature being part of the equation of diagnosis, part of the conversation about how to basically provide care for that person.
Right. And I think to answer your question, it's important that the caregiver, the partner, the person themselves...
is the advocate for
them. Is the advocate for themselves. Because our research has shown that people think their doctor should ask them about it, and the doctors think that the patient should bring it up to them. So it's a chicken and egg thing. And so one of the things that we're really passionate about is educating the public that you have to be your own advocate. If something doesn't seem right, talk about it with a loved one first. Call the Alzheimer's Association. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about it. We can give you the right tools to talk to your doctor so that you have a very informed conversation. And if they give you certain answers, how to respond to push a little further. Mm-hmm. Doctors are busy, and they have people's best interests at heart, but they're extremely busy.
Oh, they're under a lot of pressure from the way the medical practices are run now.
Exactly.
And insurances is that they have a limited amount of time. So, yes, you know, it's the old squeaky wheel theory, right? You got to be your own best advocate if you're a caregiver for somebody, or if you happen to be yourself and able to do it.
Right.
Right. And push that physician or that medical practitioner to actually engage in a different level than just kind of making sure you're getting the basic attention.
Right.
So can I ask you one other question? So
Before we do, Paul, and let's go ahead and give out the number again and the website, please.
Sure. The 800 number for our 24/7 care and support is 800-272-3900. Mm-hmm. Again, that's 800-272-3900. Our website is available with tremendous amount of support resources, information about research, clinical trials, our fundraising events, everything you could possibly imagine. We have online support groups, different things that are very beneficial. And that website is alz.org.
Okay, and then speaking of which, you have a walk coming up, right?
We do. We do. Our largest fundraising event for our care support and research programs nationwide is the Walk to End Alzheimer's, and it happens every fall throughout the country. And our events here in Orange County are September 28th at the Great Park in Irvine, October 5th at Bolsa Chica State Beach, and our brand new walk site in San Clemente, your hometown, on October 13th, and that will be at the outlets at San Clemente. And I really encourage people, if you have a loved one with dementia, it's a very dementia-friendly walk. It's just a short stroll. We have a beautiful Promise Garden flower ceremony. If you have lost a loved one to dementia, it's a great way to honor them. If you want to change the trajectory for future generations and help us raise money to achieve our goal of a world without Alzheimer's, start a team, raise money, come out to the event. It's just an amazing day. It's free to sign up. We'll give you all the tools to fundraise, and it's just a wonderful community event.
Thank you. And Paul, before you do ask your question, let's give our number again in case anybody wants to call us in the next 5 to 10 minutes while we're still on the
949-330-7760. You got any questions? You want to know, you think somebody's starting to show signs, you don't know how to handle
it? How do you identify it?
How do you identify it? How do you deal with it? How do you prevent it? Misconceptions about it? 949-330-7761.
What's your question, Paul?
Question was for you, and I appreciate you being open enough to share your own father's journey and experience with us here. Has he accepted the diagnosis, and has it changed him in any way? Did it depress him? Did it invigorate him to fight it? Or my mother fought till the day she died.
That's really an interesting question, because I'm just going to expand on it a little bit, right? We'll just deal with it in terms of challenges that happen as you age, that are medical based, right? In the case of my mother, when she was diagnosed with cancer, she basically went through the initial jarring reality, kind of coming to terms with it, right? And then the added layer of the fact that it's not surgically possible, and it's on the left side of her, her lung. It's non-surgical, so she basically pretty much had to deal with it, and no real guarantees, Mm-hmm. Like how long we still had her, right? I mean, I remember last Christmas, basically, I was running around trying to just, you know, do the typical buying everything I could buy on the shelf for people that had, don't need anything that I was going to buy them, right? And then I kind of stopped myself in my tracks halfway through the whole thing and went, and I said, hold on a second. It could have easily not had my mother with us this Christmas. This was March before is when she was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. And I like kind of just left the card alone and just went and got a couple of cards, and I genuinely wrote in those cards. And it was it's interesting that, so going back to my mother, she her faith has sustained her. And she's not, I remember her telling me one time when she came back from a doctor visit, at, you know, there was a kid there that was maybe 11 and had no hair and was also suffering with cancer, and you know, she's no better or less than that kid. And so she has framed her diagnosis in a way that is manageable for her. Mm-hmm. And she basically has this sort of, you know, whatever is going to happen happens, but I'm going to basically take an active role in my therapy. She's ornery, but she still says, I don't want to let anything stress me out. And I'm like, Mom, you know, you're kind of stressing out when you talk about it this way, but that's a different story altogether. But, you know, family dynamics don't go away, I guess is my point. They still are there, yeah. And now you have a different layer of this. So, what you know, if you have contentions that were repetitive with family members, now you have this, but then you also have the guilt for having the contentions because they're basically in a medical situation. My mom is sort of managing it. She's engaging with it. She's educating. She's the kind of person that reads everything that comes in the mail in every envelope that she ever receives, you know. And until she reads it, it sits on the table in the kitchen until they get, you know. So sometimes we don't see the table in the kitchen. Right? But she educates herself. She informs herself. She engages. She's in a little bit of denial in the fact that she needs to do a little bit more of that socializing, kind of go outside the household for me time. Right, but she's a mother, and she's very much a mother role is how she defines herself. So there's good things about that. There's bad things about that from my perspective. However, my dad, when he got diagnosed, I think he just basically, there's a part of him that just has said whatever, and kind of just is in denial about it. I think when it starts to really kind of become real for him. Is when he started realizing that his driving and his ability to drive was now in jeopardy, that could be something he's going to lose. Because basically that's his only thing that he does independently at this point, mm-hmm. right? And so we are now, you know, and again, you're trying to prolong that from ever happening as long as possible. However, as we get closer and closer to that, I see that. I also see a man that's basically... potentially, I'm not a doctor, potentially clinically depressed. And yet we're not doing anything relevant to the dealing with that.
Like, exactly. Okay, that's what I asked, right?
You're going to sit at home and do nothing and basically not be engaged and not being social, great, but at least let me see if like, you can be a little bit happier about it, right. Rather than be basically consumed and kind of dark.
Right.
Right? So he's doing the best he can, but I think, you know, and I'm not being flippant in any way. I think there are people that really need to understand that you got to develop certain muscles, and I'm using the word muscle just as a reference. But, you know, if you're not a social person, if you're not a person that's comfortable getting outside of your danger, your comfort zone, doing something that's out of the norm for you, realize that that may be sustainable as you are younger and getting old and whatever and starting a family, whatever, because you're engaged in other things. But if you don't develop that muscle, it becomes harder to develop muscle later on in life because it's so foreign to you.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? So anybody that is in a family that has a member of their family that is that kind of DNA wired, saying to yourselves and to them and others, well, this is the way he is, and we're just going to basically let them be the way they are, you're not necessarily doing them a favor.
Right.
Like, try to get them out of their comfort zone. Try to push them comfortably, not, you know, just jarringly. But whatever it takes for you to introduce a different programming, a different reality for them early enough in it for it to become a habit,
right,
you're doing them a favor.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I saw in my own, I went through it three times. My mom, my dad, and then my unmarried aunt, my mother's sister, all had various problems that eventually took their life. One fought it. One was depressed, you know, to send them into tailspin, and one denied it. You know, that seems to be the three common things I saw. I suppose maybe fourth would be try and just deal with it and manage it or something here. But it, you can easily, when you find you have something serious like this, go into a deep hole and not recover. Or some people get motivated, I'm going to fight it, I'm going to take action, I'm going to go out and
I'm
do
not going to let this beat me. But yeah. but I think
if, and then many just deny it.
But I think
don't want to talk about
it. If you really looked at people before even anything like this becomes part of the reality, they have a certain wiring of
sure.
a certain gear in which they operate.
Sure.
They're challenged, they deal with challenges in a certain way. They're faced with decision making, they deal with it in a different way. And it's not hard to predict
which one they're going to do.
Extrapolate yeah. what yeah. you're going to basically be
yeah.
facing.
Right.
But you don't want to be in a situation where you are isolated, to your point earlier, where, you know, planning for your senior years and where are you going to live? Think of places where there's opportunities for a lot
right.
of social interaction.
Right.
Is there a senior center nearby? I mean, the senior centers in Orange County have amazing educational programs,
resources,
social
programming,
programs.
Absolutely.
For every type of person, whether you're introverted, extroverted, they have something to offer. And so it's very important to utilize those services. It's also important to think about, okay, if my spouse dies and I'm alone, what type of community would I want to be in? And where
Certainly.
Am I going to find the care if you don't have children or family nearby? You know, you have to plan for those things while you're still able. And if a family does receive a diagnosis of dementia, you know, hopefully they've received it early on, and the Alzheimer's Association can provide tools to make the most of every day, because there are going to be communication issues, there are going to be agitation mm-hmm. issues, there are going to be food issues, hygiene issues, all of those things that could make for a day-to-day, very stressful existence for the person with dementia and their caregivers and families. We have resources to help deal with that. And dealing with stress is a very important piece of caregiver burnout. We need to ensure that our caregivers know how to take care of themselves
and take that
time.
And that stress is not necessarily only in the primary relationship between the person who's maybe suffering from the disease and their primary caregiver. That primary caregiver now also carries that and affects all the relationships in their lives in one
Absolutely.
Way or the other.
One big ripple.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I remember when they first started doing like cruise ship trips for caregivers specifically,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, and it was like, oh yeah, you know, caregivers need care too. Right,
they're not
an endless resource that basically doesn't burn out.
Yeah, they
right? right.
They are not an endless resource. That is true.
And give out some of the other resources, because in addition to you guys, we've all seen there's other things that have Alzheimer's in their name. And there's three or four other groups that serve different functions. Give us some other ones. Let's.
Sure.
I know
so,
you're touting your group, but
yeah,
they're
well,
all
of course,
affiliated.
They're
together,
all important.
Right?
They're all important. Orange County has the third. It has. Alzheimer's is the third leading cause of death in Orange County.
Wow.
And
wow.
so we are fortunate in Orange County. There are a myriad of organizations
yep.
That serve people who are aging and who have dementia. There are Alzheimer's Family Services in Huntington Beach, Alzheimer's Orange County in Irvine. There's
and some of these provide daycare. That's what I was getting
yeah,
at. They provide
yeah.
different things
than
you do.
There's
yeah.
Alzheimer's focuses. Family Services has a great adult day program, as does Alzheimer's Orange County. Their focus is adult day programs as well. On UCI Mind, we fund over $1 million in research there. Families can go there for diagnostics, and they also have clinical trials that we are part of. And then, of course, the Alzheimer's Association for funding the research to end this disease and providing the resources for care and support. We have support groups throughout Orange County. We have classes for early memory loss. We have communication strategies classes. All of those are available for information on our website or on our Facebook page. You can find information. We're also, for people really interested in the progress in the research, we are offering a research update. Our chief science officer is coming out from our headquarters in Chicago to Orange County on August 20th, and she's going to be giving free community research updates in Mission Viejo at Mount of Olives Church at 1 o'clock on August 20th, and then at the Huntington Beach Senior Center at 6 p.m. on August 20th, and that's a free community forum asking questions about the research, learning mm-hmm. the latest breakthroughs, and a lot on lifestyle factors.
Let me also bring up this, right? We're talking about the resources. We're talking about the availability of the information. We're talking about all the support, right? But let's at least we forget, okay, that it has to be funded somehow.
Right.
Yeah, it's not free.
Not free.
So for everybody who's listening and
I mean, there's free support groups and stuff, but the effort needs money to continue.
Anybody that's listening that has basically maybe been jarred a little bit into reality or basically is now basically concerned, you know, I tell people, if you're feeling a little panicked and concerned, you're probably exactly in the right spot where you need to be right now. Mm-hmm. And the sooner you get there, the sooner you can transition past that and feel a little empowered to do something else about it. But there, don't forget that this needs to be funded. That fundraising is a big part of how these organizations basically provide, and it's a mixture. And the fundraising world and the nonprofit world, for anybody who's been engaged in it, has changed dramatically in terms of how the funding happens and where the grants money comes in and all this stuff comes in. So not only should you be familiar with these organizations, but also consider, you know, how you can help, because you're basically helping yourself.
Yeah,
if we could get rid of this.
Nobody in this room is getting out, you know, without being somehow impacted by this disease, either directly or indirectly. And as we get older, the likelihood of it being directly is higher and higher.
Absolutely. There are so many people who are impacted by this disease. Once they start talking about it and bring it out into the open, I run into people all the time that, you know, I'll be wearing an Alzheimer's Association shirt and somebody will tap me on the shoulder in the store and say, "Do you work for them? What do they do?" You know, they will tell me my grandfather has Alzheimer's and they'll practically have tears in their eyes and they're 20 years old. I mean, this is an issue that affects everyone. Our studies have shown that it is the largest health concern of every age group in the country, with all of the other health concerns combined not meeting the number of people who are concerned about getting Alzheimer's or caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's.
I think when we had the gentleman who's the head of the AgeWell down south that runs a lot of senior centers, the statistics were like by 2045 or something like that, one out of five was going to be over the age of 65 in Orange County.
Yeah, we get a new person over 65 every 10 seconds in the United States.
And I read a statistic, and I don't know if this is an exaggerated one, that, again, it's not solely an age-related issue. There's environmental and genetics and stuff.
There is early onset, and early onset is something. Do we have a minute to talk about it?
Yeah, we'll give you an extra minute here. This is important.
Early onset Alzheimer's is something I didn't know about until I came to work for the Alzheimer's Association, and it does impact people in their late 40s and 50s. Mm-hmm. And I've met so many families in Orange County where this has been the case, and one woman in particular who's one of our very active volunteers, and her husband, their story is especially poignant because she's my age and her husband is my husband's age. And she tells the story about how their business was declining and they were fighting all the time and she didn't know what was going on. And actually on Valentine's Day 2 years ago, they got the diagnosis that he has Alzheimer's early onset. And she said it saved their marriage, as sad as that was. She was ready to divorce him because he just wasn't himself and she didn't know what was happening, and finally got him to go to the doctor and got the diagnosis. And, you know, they do have a strong support network around them with their friends and family and the Alzheimer's Association. But if you notice something different, it is so, you know, it goes back to the point earlier of it's so important to talk to your doctor because, you know, he had an early diagnosis, and they're living life to the fullest until, you know, they can't. And well, that's so important.
That kind of a diagnosis puts things in a different perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm not trying to recall whether it was somebody on this show or not, but we had a discussion one time and some young man, I think he was even in high school. Remember this, Paul? Somebody who was basically saying they took care of it.
I was going to say vaguely, but it sounds like I've got Alzheimer's there.
He took care of his father. Mm-hmm. He was the primary caregiver for his father when his father had early onset.
Yep.
And this young man's reality was that when his friends were basically going around, you know, going out to parties and doing something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He basically was going and taking care of his father.
Yeah, that's very common.
So it's not an age, to your point, Paul. It's not necessarily an age only thing.
Yeah, right.
It could affect everybody. It's like when we talk about, you know, disabilities and people with diminishing physical capabilities. It may be somebody who suffered from a surfing accident at a younger age. It's not necessarily something that's age or oriented.
Car accident
only.
Or
so
something.
I guess what I'm saying is don't park this concern or kick the can down the road. We'll deal with it later.
Right.
Okay. Don't, you know what? I'm going to work for 65 years, and then I'm going to live life after I retire. Like, you have to engage in this stuff early enough, and literally, and you said it, prepare for your senior years, not just in terms of financial ability, but this muscle. Like, if you make sure, what are you going to do? You can only play so much golf.
Exactly.
Right. It's assuming you can remember how to play golf,
or watch so much TV.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You're absolutely right, and it's important to develop hobbies in your later years. I actually just decided that I'm doing triathlons, and I'm doing 10 before I retire from triathlons, and I've done 2, and I'm training for a third. But all of those, it gave me a whole new social network of people, you know, outside of work,
and a purpose, and a goal to achieve earlier.
And it ticks off many of the 10 ways to love your brain, because, you know, you have to walk the talk. And, you know, it's important, you know, just for brain health, to keep your body mass index under 25. Really compelling research has shown that keeping your blood pressure under 120 is very important for staving off mild cognitive impairment by 5 years. And if we delay mild cognitive impairment by 5 years in people over the age of 65, within the next 2 years, there'll be about 3 million fewer cases of Alzheimer's. Wow. So, you know, all of these things to have a healthy lifestyle are really, really, really strong focus.
So we have some control of how it affects us and if it affects us. And yet,
it's part of your personal accountability. It's part of your health and wellness regimen. I mean, we're talking about blood pressure.
Yep.
Okay. Well, one of the best ways to control blood pressure is dietary.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Exercise is another one.
Exercise, right.
So if you're not doing those two, you're basically already sort of behind the eight ball on a few things.
Maybe
you might want to look at it differently,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But I don't do enough of those things.
You sit here all day.
We can all do more. And you know, the biggest advice that I would give to people is, you know that there's a lifeline with the Alzheimer's Association to guide you through any concerns.
Right.
But just, you know, personally, if there's something you want to go do, go do it. Don't put it off. You don't know what's around the Ben tomorrow.
Don't argue for your own limitations.
Exactly. Okay?
Can I give you a jarring way?
What's the worst that could happen? You do it one time, you don't do it again.
Exactly.
Can I give you a jarring way maybe to wrap this up
and motivate people? And the dietary and the exercise, okay? We're not saying, you know, turn into Jack LaLanne and basically...
Google him. You don't even remember your Jack LaLanne.
And his jumpsuit.
Hell, he was around long enough for the juicer craze, right?
About
10 years ago. So, but don't... we're not saying, you know, be deadlifting, you know, like your body mass times 2 and, you know, eating only like keto diet or whatever. But the more you are informed and educated and making some of these decisions, even if they are momentary decisions that you then adjust and do something else, you are engaged in your own well-being, responsible for your own well-being. And at the end of the day, you may not basically stop being impacted by an Alzheimer or dementia disease, but you will basically have quality of life that you are a little bit more in control of as long as possible.
Excellently said.
And let me give you the alternative for those who haven't seen it. I had a chance to work and get to know the late, great Maureen Reagan, and her father obviously became a poster child for Alzheimer's, and she spent the last years of her life taking care of the last years of his life. And became big in all this stuff.
For those who don't know who you're talking about?
Ronald Reagan, the President Ronald Reagan. So she...
if you don't know who we're talking about and you're in Orange County, you'd probably just lost your visa.
Oh, ouch. So go Google this. And she told me this statement that Nancy Reagan was attributed to saying. And I think it summarizes the disease and gives you a haunting image of it. The way they described the great Ronald Reagan in his final years when he retreated into this darkness of Alzheimer's was that it was as if he had died, but they hadn't buried him. He was still walking around, but he was dead. A haunting image of a man who once was admired and so active, becoming so isolated and alone.
Well, I mean, there's certain aspects of life that you cannot reverse. There's certain realities you're going to have to face, or you can be in denial and say, no, I'm not going to face them. That's a choice you will face at that moment in time. But again, there, just like everything else we talk about relevant to seniors, you have the ability to engage and to get informed and inform yourself and expand your knowledge base, right? And engage maybe even in volunteering possibly, or helping, or advocating, or what have you. Having a purpose, whether it is to expand your own knowledge or to help others, is a is a good thing to keep you engaged and alive. The worst you can do is isolate. It makes you a very vulnerable person to all kinds of different things.
That's true.
You're right, and so you're not doing yourself a favor if somebody's around you that you care that somebody you care about. You know, do it for yourself. You are probably going to be that person's primary caregiver. So
yeah.
I hate to sound selfish, but the longer you can prolong the fact that you have to get into that role, the better for you as well as them.
Yes,
it isn't fun.
It is not, and it truly is the long goodbye, as you were saying.
Yeah,
and
right.
You know, it's important to just really accentuate the point that this is an issue that impacts every age.
Every age.
30% of caregivers are under the age of 18.
Wow.
That's not, if I don't have children, but I wouldn't want my children spending their childhood that way.
Right. So you raise, it's a good point. And like, you know, if you are a person that's getting older and you have not taken the time to educate yourself about this and what your options are and what you can do, if you're not doing it for yourself, do it for your kids or people that are in your family that are likely to become that caregiver.
Right.
And get yourself out of that comfort zone so that in the future you may not put them in a situation where they have to deal with more than they have to.
And if you can't talk about it, get people to tune into the Rad Life, because we talk about this stuff all the time.
Always talk about it. So before we go off the air, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
This is a very important conversation.
Appreciate it very
we cannot
much.
Have enough of.
Thank you for
happy
being
here. Happy to come back right, anytime.
Thank you for to share your own personal story.
No, I think I wanted to. I mean, and thank you for letting me do that, because I think I can't tell you in any more direct way how directly impactful this can be.
Right.
It's happening to me right now. I'm dealing with it. And I hope to God that I deal with it for as long as possible, because the alternative of that is that I basically will not have my parent there around, my dad around,
right,
or my mom. Before we get off the air, again, how do they get hold of the Alzheimer's Association?
So the Alzheimer's Association, we can be reached at 800-272-3900 for our 800 number 24/7. And our local number is 949-344-3849. I never call it. Something like that.
Call the 800 number.
Call the 800 number.
And then the website?
The website is alz.org.
Thank you, Anne, for being
Thank
here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Paul.
And let's remind everybody that the Rad Life will be on hiatus for the month of August.
We are taking, I kind of shared a little bit of why I'm taking the month off next month. I have things that I need to just focus on. The show is not going anywhere. We will be back strong. I already have people wanting to be on the show through December. So we will be back on in September, full force. But, you know, I do want to say thank you, everybody, for supporting this show for 4.5 years. We're definitely not letting you go or getting out of your lives. We will be back in September with more great guests and more information and conversations that you should be having anyway. Meanwhile, while I'm gone and I'm off the air, there will be old episodes that I will share. And start having those conversations. I want to hear about them when I come back. Tell me how you spent your summer. Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Rad Life Radio Show with your host and age explorer, Rad Gontos, brought to you on the one and only OCTalkRadio.net. Join us again next week as we continue our journey of discovery into life's challenges, opportunities, options, and all the latest and greatest things that come with getting older.